This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 276 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
Aloha. I'm David Vanderhoof in Waimea, Hawaii. Hey, Max, how are you? Sorry, but, you know, the weather's sure beautiful. How's the weather in Connecticut?
It's still winter.
Trust me, I know. I'm going to come back to it, but it's nice feeling the bounty breezes and being in our 50th state. It's only my second day here, so we'll see. Tomorrow I leave for Waikiki and Pearl Harbor, and spending time seeing something I've studied my whole life, so looking forward to that. But we got a lot of news today. It's kind of a fun show, a bit on the wild side. How about that?
Yeah, that's an excellent way to describe it, David.
So should we get started? Because I want to get to the beach.
Let's get started.
Well, our first story comes from rotorandwing.com. Department of Homeland Security planning drone mitigation and tracking evaluations later this year. My current theme for this year is the big trend is counter air or counter UAS. So here we have Department of Homeland Security planning an exercise on counter UAS.
They intend to release a request for information from vendors, and they want to be able to, they say, detect, track, and identify small unmanned aircraft systems, as well as ultralight aircraft and small manned aircraft, all below 500 feet along the border. But, you know, we talk so much about or hear so much about the southern border. This is for the northern border.
Yeah, we have the largest contiguous border between us and Canada that we don't ever talk about. So it was, I guess, in 2019... for the fiscal year, it was sort of like, well, we need to be doing something for the northern border. Plus, we have a major drone test site in North Dakota, so it's utilizing that. But it's interesting that it's not just drones, but small unmanned aircraft. It harks back to when the gyrocopter landed on the front lawn of the Capitol building, and we've had other small airplanes land in the White House. So it's a multi-function test. Interesting that they're focusing on that. I'm sure that eventually the technology will move to the southern border and all of the political ramifications of that.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, other than weather, it's still the same task, I guess. So technology that applies to one border, you would think would apply to any borders. But this is in kind of a state of flux in a way, because both the House and the Senate have their own markups for this fiscal year 2019 DHS appropriations bill, and it directs the this research to be done in the northern border. But the bill is stalled because of this difference between the president and the Congress over funding portions of the wall for the southern border. So it isn't enacted yet. However, the Department of Homeland Security says that they will honor the intent of both the House and Senate Appropriations Committees with regard to the drone evaluations. So essentially what's happening is the DHS says essentially that they're going to go ahead and issue this request for information and not wait for the requirement to become law. So that's kind of an interesting move. But curious to see who responds to the request for information. That's not quite at the award state yet, but it would indicate which companies or organizations have interest in supporting this kind of an effort.
Absolutely. And hopefully this government shutdown, et cetera, will become unbearable no longer, which leads me to our next story. This is where we're going to get into the wilds of drones, which is bears are getting used to drones. This is from care2.com. We've talked about wildlife conservation a lot on this show. It just ironically that one of the things that we get used to is the animals are getting used to drone activity, which may not be such a good idea, and it's a good thing.
Well, there's a study, and this is in the Conservation Physiology publication. They note that unmanned systems are being used around them, like you say, around wildlife for a variety of purposes, sometimes recreational flying, sometimes for research or for conservation efforts. But they wanted to learn more scientifically about the effect of drones on animals. And so they chose Minnesota black bears to be the subjects of their study. And so they flew drones over them 5 times a day, twice a week. And somehow they were able to measure the bears' heart rates. I guess they must have had some kind of a monitor attached to the bears, because they wanted to see what their heart rates did when these drones started flying overhead. And as you might suspect, at the beginning, when the drones first started flying over the bears, their heart rates increased. But after a couple of weeks, things changed a little bit, David.
The bears' hearts stopped beating as fast when the drones showed up. So clearly they weren't getting to be as scared or heartbeat or whatever. Or I keep thinking of Winnie the Pooh and him running away from the honeypot with all of the bees with the sound of the drones. But they just seem to be, okay, it's just another piece of wildlife, etc., that just shows up. When scientists stopped flying the drones for 118 days and started again, the bears still didn't react to the drones. So it wasn't that they just got used to it temporarily. They seemed to got used to it permanently, or at least for an extended period of time. So interesting. Max, this might actually lead us to drone delivery. Maybe people won't be so annoyed at the buzzing of their quadcopter delivering their Amazon package after they've had it show up 5 or 6 times a day for multiple weeks. Maybe their blood pressure will keep down. What do you think?
Wow, I hadn't thought of that. David, that's very interesting. Maybe that is a possibility. You know what I immediately thought of is when you were living basically at the end of the runway, off the end of the airport there, probably when you first moved there, the noise of the airplanes flying overhead was pretty noticeable. But I suspect that after some period of time, you probably just tuned out the racket from the airplanes.
Well, I live, my new apartment is actually next to SEPTA, which is one of the local regional rail lines. And I don't, unless I'm really attentive, I don't hear the trains go by anymore. So, I mean, and anybody who's lived in a house that's got traffic, unless there's a siren or something, you don't hear the traffic. So, I mean, it makes sense. It's just funny that we talk about noise abatement with drones. And here we have the easiest way to do it is you just fly them all over the place and it becomes barely perceptible.
Barely. Oh, yeah. So interesting point. It's kind of depressing to think, though, that we'd all get used to this incessant buzzing overhead. But maybe it's just another form of the noise pollution we're immersed in. But speaking of noises, how about the noises that elephants make?
and eavesdropping on them. You know, it's you've got all these big ears, but we're using the ears on the elephants. This is a shout out to the girlfriend. This was from BBC.com. How eavesdropping on elephants is keeping them safe. Of course, when we've been dealing with wildlife management and our friend Princess Aaliyah Pandolfi, conservation is a big deal in poaching, especially in using drones for preventing poaching. In this case, they're using AI or deep learning to decipher recordings of elephants to keep them from being poached.
The researchers are interested in the different calls, elephant calls, the sounds that they make. And they speculate that if they can better understand what the elephants are saying to each other, that would help improve their survival rate. So they've been very interested in recording these calls, and they've been using drones to do that. They also would like to be able to use the drones for things like identifying poachers, as well as identifying, you know, where the elephants are and so forth. And I thought it was kind of telling that the early pass at this, it sounds like they used more consumer or prosumer kinds of drones, and they discovered that they really were not robust enough for the conditions where they were flying these drones. So they're going to have to kind of rethink the hardware.
I wonder if the elephants got used to the drones being, you know, listening to them. And do they remember, since elephants never forget, do they remember what it sounds like? But it is interesting that we're using drones to communicate with other wildlife, you know. Learning the animals' conversations using drones is not something 4 years ago when we started this show we would be talking about, but here we are listening and learning more in a standoff sort of way to help the animals. So again, two stories, drones for good. One's got a little bit of a negative twin to it, but drones interacting with wildlife. But we've got one more story. This is sort of the same thing. And this goes to New Zealand. And this was sent from our friend Errol on our Slack listener team. And of course, we want you to be part of our Slack listener team. And you can do that by sending us an email at feedback@theUAVDigest. And you can join the conversation. But this was from Dr. Andrew Digby. It's not really a story, but a tweet. But we'll have the tweet in our show notes. And Dr. Digby is an astronomer turned conservation biologist and is a scientist for the New Zealand Department of Conservation. And they are using drones to fly semen to help the kakapo.
I think it's the kakapo.
Kakapo, which is a flightless ground-dwelling parrot in New Zealand, which... they're kind of cool. The video, the tweet that we had one in it. It's a large, flightless New Zealand bird. I didn't know. I always thought New Zealand was Kiwis, but the kikapoo is kind of a neat thing, and they're using drones in special ways to restore the population.
Right, and this population is seriously endangered, according to the source of all knowledge, Wikipedia. It says, as of February 2019, there were only 147 adult birds still alive, that's a small population. And in fact, there are so few of them that the scientists have named each and every one of them. But because of the introduction of predators, things like cats and rats and ferrets and other things during the early European colonization, these kakapos were almost totally wiped out. So conservation efforts were started actually back in the 1890s, but were not very successful. But we have this program that was started in 1995, the Kakapo Recovery Program. And part of that project involves artificial insemination of these ground-dwelling parrots in order to improve the reproduction rate. Now, and here again, we end up talking about things we never thought we would talk about, but here we're talking about flying semen so that these birds can be artificially inseminated. And as you can imagine, that's a time-sensitive process. And so they can utilize drones to fly this over to where it's needed really quickly. In the tweet, Dr. Digby notes that as opposed to spending 90 minutes walking the sample to where it needs to be, with a drone you can get there in 9 minutes. So that's a real time savings. So there's an interesting use for this. They're using some other technologies as well, not just drones. They're using things like smart eggs. Apparently, if you can give one of these kekipos an egg that simulates through its vibrations a real egg, then the birds are more likely to start their nest preparation in advance, and that's good. They're using smart transmitters to locate the birds, data loggers placed at strategic locations, some other things too, some smart traps and nest kits. So they're using drones. It's just one piece of this overall strategy to help these birds.
I think it's really cool that we talk about stuff that we never would have even thought about talking about on this show. You know,
I know.
And the semen delivery is a really good argument why we want drones for med delivery. You know, you're talking about in a unique terrain and not necessarily easily traveled on foot. But in this case, something as time sensitive as a medication delivery, or in this case, semen for artificial insemination, it's a valuable asset. So drone delivery, this is going to be a big deal. I think this is going to be going. Congratulations to the team down there. It's a really cool story. And thank you, Errol, for sending it to us. But let's talk about some other endangered species, commonly known as the T-33, a aircraft designed in 1946 by Clarence Kelly Johnson at Lockheed. It was based on the P-80, which was the first real successful jet in the United States. But it's got a reemergence, sort of, as a drone, a armed drone in Iran. And this story comes from intelligencenews.com. Iran's latest homemade drone resembles an orange whale and won't be winning any stealth technology awards. This was kind of the laughingstock of the AvGeek community on Twitter, but we converted T-33s here in the United States to drones back in the 50s. But Iran's up-to-date modern technology has now created a orange one that they are threatening the United States with.
The article says the drone is powered by a General Electric J85 turbojet engine. And I think that may not be technically correct because, for one thing, General Electric isn't able to sell anything approaching this technology to Iran. But the Iranians, a couple of years ago, David, didn't they reverse engineer the J85 engine? And so really what this thing must be powered by is their version of that engine.
Since the fall of Iran and the fall of the Shah, we've embargoed basically all of the technology there. So they have spent years reverse engineering all of their equipment, or coming upon them via back channels and illegal methods, etc. So a T-33 by any other name is a T-33, and it's a very successful aircraft. But it is kind of ironic that anybody who knows anything about aviation looked at this and went, okay, it's a T-33 without a cockpit, and it's orange, and yes, you can make any aircraft a drone, but I don't think it would be what we would call a high threat vehicle. I mean, it's going to, as far as stealth goes and as far as radar pictures, et cetera, radar profile and infrared signature, It's going to stick out like a sore thumb. So I don't think we should be threatened by it. But it's interesting that it was presented as a state-of-the-art piece of technology. I'm sure Kelly is up there rolling in his grave. But then again, everything the man designed was kind of amazing and has last forever. And I'm sure if we could afford them, we'd still be flying SR-71s. And we do fly F-104s. And everything else that man has designed has stood the test of time. So maybe it's a newfound use for T-33s.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, in order to create the future Kellys of the world, we need to get young people interested in aviation, interested in STEM, and we've got a story that attempts to address that.
Yeah, this is from BIE.org, which is the British International Education Association, and it's supported by the British Science Museum, the Royal Institution, and the Royal Air Force Museum. And basically, there's a submission deadline by March 31st, 2019, and you can register for the STEM Youth Innovation Competition at biacompetition.org. So it's to design a drone.
This is an event that they held last year for students to promote STEM and in the context of unmanned aircraft, drones. And it was last year available just for British students. This year, it's a worldwide competition. And again, it's open for students under the age of 18. Entry is free. That submission deadline is coming up pretty quick, March 31st. So it might be too late now for your school group, let's say, to pull something together. But you can take a look at it. The international finals will be held on July 4, 2019 at the Royal Air Force Museum in London. If you're in that area, that might be an interesting event to attend. I think kind of think of it as a sort of a giant science fair that's drone related. And the theme this year is for teams to design and develop drones that are used for protecting wild and endangered animals. But it's big. Last year, there were over 2,500 schools entered. This year, since it's international, boy, it could be quite the event.
And it follows the topic nicely. Wildlife conservation, and it's important. And I'm looking forward to doing some conservation next week as I go whale watching for the first time in my life. So I'm thinking of all of those drone videos I've watched in preparation to watch a whale. So I'm looking forward to that. But Max, breaking news. We have a video of the week. You know, we keep asking for people to send these things in and they don't. But this one we got from our friend Tim from our Slack listener team. And kind of wild. What do you think? Would you try base jumping?
No, absolutely not. Not in a million years. This is a video, yes, from our friend Tim Trott. This is the GoPro Awards, base jumping with FPV drone in 4K. And it's short. It's like a minute because it was part of this GoPro $1 million challenge. It was a contest that was associated with the introduction of the GoPro Hero 7. And the competition was for highlight reels specifically. So they're shorts. But this one is amazing. Base jumping is an interesting sport. And I think, you know, you've probably seen other videos shot from drones of that kind of activity. But I'll call it the cinematography in this video is really, really spectacular. And some creative shots. There was one, David, where I saw the drone fly between the guy and the parawing or parachute up above, which means the drone flew through the parachute lines. I thought that was kind of impressive.
Dangerous.
Yeah, that too. Also, of course, with these wide-angle lenses on these kinds of sports cameras, you get a lot of curvature of the horizon. And I think we've all seen that. If you have a level horizon across the center of the video, it'll be flat. But as soon as you move the horizon above or below that center line in the image, you get some significant curvature. And the way the photographer, in this case, angled the camera to minimize the, not the effect, but minimize the impression of the effect, I thought was really, really good. So it's a great little video. Of course, there are a lot of other videos that were submitted as well. And so we'll put a link to the GoPro Million Dollar Challenge webpage in there, and you can hunt around for some other drone videos if you like.
Which, if you have your drone videos and you find something you really like, send it to us. Max and I love watching this, and we love being able to get you guys involved. I mean, and even if it's quirky or, you know, some of the stranger things, but like base jumping, but definitely send it to us. We look forward to hearing from you. So you can send it to us via feedback@theuavdigest.com. So, Max, I think that's pretty much the show for this week, and I've got a beach that I want to go to. What do you think?
Yeah, I got to get you out there in the sun. I want to thank all of you for listening to episode 276 of the UAV Digest. Find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes, theuavdigest.com/276. And if you do that, you'll find links to all of the articles that we discussed. You can find the promotional video for that BIEA drone design competition, that STEM competition. You can see the base jumping video of the week. Look at other GoPro videos from that contest. And if you want to see what a KK Po looks like, you can find a shot in the show notes. You know, you can actually adopt one of those if you like. And so that might be something that folks might be interested in as a way to support this conservation effort.
And maybe we need to adopt one for the podcast, Max.
Yeah.
But so I guess with that, you know, you can participate. We're a group participation kind of organization, and you can find us on Facebook at UAV Digest. You can find us on Twitter, which is how we found about the Kekapos, and find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. Of course, like I said, you can join our Slack listener team. You can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And please, if you listen via some sort of podcatcher, either Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher.com, leave some feedback there so they can find us. Or leave us a message saying you like the show at feedback@theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say aloha from Hawaii. And this is David in Waimea.
And Max still in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.